Here we are. 4R, it's 1 o'clock on Monday, and we're here for our weekly discussion of Pirkei Avot and all kinds of stuff that, emanates from it. We are making a move today. We're leaving Hillel behind, and we're going to look at his, partner and sparring partner. Shammai, as opposed to Hillel, was a product of the, let's call it the establishment in Eretz Yisrael. He was known as something of a strict individual. He's a person who didn't brook fools. You know, didn't tolerate fools. Not lightly. Not at all. There are all these stories, the Gemara has all kinds of stories about how situations in which Hillel, being nice and opening and, what's the word I guess we'd use today, inclusive, paid off and brought about wonderful results, as opposed to Shammai who, you know, if you didn't make it the first time, you were out. If you had you had the first cut and that was all. We'll see that things aren't that simple, but you do have two different types of personality here, and maybe that's good. We've talked about this in the past, that part of humility is the idea that I know who I am and I know who I'm not, and as a result, I can look out and look for people who can compliment me and that I can compliment in turn, and together we can get off our egos and get important things done. So, the Mishnah, it's chapter 1, Mishnah 14, Shammai Omer. Shammai used to say, Asei Toratcha Keva, make your Torah Keva. We're going to have to see what that means. It's not clear what that means. Asei Toratcha Keva, Emor Me'at Ve'Hasei Harbe, say little and do much. Ve'Heve Mekabelet Kol Ha'adam B'Sever Panim Yafot. Greet everyone with a smile. They greet everyone pleasantly. Now, everybody sits there and says, wait a minute. Shammai was this really tough guy. I mean, what are we talking about? He wasn't the kind of guy you went out for coffee with. Maybe he was. I don't know. Maybe you need a couple of drinks first. I don't know. But the point is, a lot of commentaries say, whoa. he's not the guy that you would have expected to say, first thing off, be nice to everybody that you call Adam. Everybody. Be nice to everybody. We'll have to take a look at that. I knew plenty of very wise and great people who were scary. They were scared. They were really, really scary. For example, Rav Soloveitchik was scary, but not in the same way. I'll give you an example. My doctoral advisor, Professor Yitzhak Twersky from Harvard, was a very scary guy. He was really, really terrifying. We were like, you know, yeah, like this around him, and he didn't discourage us in that regard either. It was very clear to him that clearly to us that he didn't really particularly want to hang out with us either. I remember one story though, just to give you a sense of this. A friend of mine went to bring him a chapter of his doctorate. So when he gave him the chapter, so Twersky said to him, I hope that you've come here begeder ashrei mi shebalachan v'talmudo biyado. I hope you come with the invoking a Gemara. The Gemara says that happy is a person that comes to Olam Haba when he has serious achievements in Torah learning. In other words, talmudo biyado, he really spent his time on earth learning Torah and implementing Torah properly. So Twersky's idea was, you know, I hope you come and everything's ready and the chapter won't require that many revisions, that much editing. I mean, doctorates at Harvard in those days took 10 to 15 years anyways. I took 15 years. It's on the outside, but it's not outrageous in terms of what was required. Most people took at least 10 years simply because we were too terrified to turn in chapters. Anyway, so when he said, Ashrei Mishabalachem B'Talmudo B'Yado, So my friend sat there thinking for a minute, wait a minute, that's about what happens when you die and you go to the next world. So he looked at him, I don't know how he had the guts to say this. He says, Professor Tversky, when I come to see you, I don't really die. I might want to die, but I don't really die. So that's you know, so there are people like that. I mean, he's not the only one. And and Shammai seemingly would be one of those types. With a smile and with your eyes, not glaring, with your eyes, glistening, sparkling. That's not the Shammai we know. So we're gonna have to look at that. It doesn't really fit. Anyways, let's start with the beginning of this Mishnah, and then we'll follow it through. Okay. So, Asei Toratcha Keva. Make your Torah Keva. So, what does Keva mean? Keva means Kavua in Hebrew, means permanent. It means set. It means consistent. A person has a Horat Keva. If you go to the bank and in Israel, and you want to have the bank pay your electric bill on a regular, every month. So, the bill goes straight to the bank. The bank information is filed with whoever's the with the electric company, let's say, and they're allowed because of a horaat keva, a permanent order, to just take the money out of the bank. I mean, plenty of people forget, they look at the bank account and all of a sudden, wow, 1,000 shekels missing. What happens? Oh, the electric company came. So it can mean permanent, it can mean set, it can mean unflexible, it can mean eternal. It can mean a lot of things. So what does Asei Toratcha Keva mean? So there, not surprisingly, there are a number of different interpretations of what he's trying to say. And usually, as I think I've mentioned in more than one occasion, when commentators offer suggestions to Pirkei Avot, and that's true of a number of different classical texts in the Jewish library, their choice of interpretations often say as much, if not more, about them as they do about the text. Because the text itself, if a text, for example, can mean two, three, four, five things, and you choose one, that's your choice. Now, it could be because the words make more sense that way, but it also could be because that's what you find meaningful right now, which means that tells me about where I'm at or where you are when you're writing your commentary, right? So, that being the case, Asei Toratcha Keva could mean any of the following things. It could mean A, be sure that you set aside specific times for learning, and don't miss them. That's called kviat itim l'Torah, to set times aside, set times, inviolable times to learn. Okay, say Torah keva, which would mean that keva all means both established, set in terms of chronology or in terms of chronomy, but also it means in terms of consistency. Be kavua at it. Don't mess around. Never miss a Seder. Never miss your time. If your time is in the morning, if your time is in the evening, you don't go to sleep before you do it. Whatever. And it doesn't matter what we're talking about. It could be Chumash. It could be Navi. It could be philosophy. It could be history. It could be Gemara. It could be, I don't know, whatever it is. But the important part is to say Torah Chakeva. The only way to get anywhere is to be consistent. And to be persistent. And even if it's 1 o'clock in the morning and you I really don't understand whatever it is I'm studying, at least I'll do it. And that's because anybody who knows, who tries Daf Yomi, for example, or Rambam Yomi, or the daily chapter in Tanakh, you miss a day, you miss 2 days, oh man, it's so easy to fall off the face of the earth. Afterwards, you just get behind and you just never catch up. So that's one way of looking at the word keva. Another way of looking at the word keva is a seitar keva means be conservative in the way that you study Torah. That's an intriguing possibility. What do you mean seitar keva? Well, we don't know much about Shammai in terms of his specific teachings, but we know not a little bit about one of his disciples. And his name was Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, Rebbeleze ben Hyrcanus was a student of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, which means that he was an eyewitness to the destruction of the temple, and he was part of the cadre of rabbis who helped to reestablish Jewish learning and Jewish life in the generation after, the years after the destruction of the temple. He flourished, that's what scholars would write, he flourished, FL. He flourished in the 70s and 80s of the Common Era, which means about 60, 70 years after Shammai. But Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus is known as being an aficionado of Shammai and his school. And Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus was extremely conservative in terms of the way he applied, in terms of the way he interpreted the Torah, and in terms of the way he applied the Torah. So, for example, I'll give you one example of each. When it came to, for example, Sukkot, it says, Basukkot teshvu shiva yamim, kol ha'ezrach b'Yisrael yeshvu basukkot. You live in booths for 7 days. Every citizen, every member of the Jewish people should live in a Sukkot 7 days. I should live in a Sukkah. What do you mean by living? So there's all kinds of variations. Can you leave the Sukkah? Can you not? How far can you leak? Is there any situation you can be without a Sukkah? Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus was extremely literal in this regard. His position was, and it apparently reflects Beit Shammai, certainly quite possibly, was that for 14 days, guys, you don't leave the Sukkah. You take all of your meals there, and there is a certain number of meals you have to have there, 14 meals, whatever the case might be. The Gemara in Sukkah discusses this. And because he takes it very, very, he's what in general law they call a strict constructionist. I high as close to the literal meaning of the law or the narrow meaning of the law as possible. Now, that doesn't make him a Karaite or somebody like that or a Sadducee, because Sadducees and Karaites in this regard are on the same page. But it means you have a lot less room to be able to interpret. You have a lot less. The range, how far away from the simple meaning of the words you can go, is much more restricted. And another occasion, simply, by the way, goes with this, is Aseitar Ad Chakeva. He on many occasions remarked that he never, ever, ever said anything that he hadn't heard as a tradition from his teachers, which means that he didn't give himself that much room to interpret or to apply outside of a very narrow realm the traditions he got from his teachers. He didn't expand the oral law, just as he did, as he very much didn't expand the written law. He stuck with whatever he had, and that's all. That use of the word keva. Is understandable, would mean that Aseitar Ad Chakeva be very, very, I don't say narrow-minded, but let's be very, very conservative, be very, very careful, don't be expansive in the way that you understand the Torah. Now, I'll give you a contra to that. The Mishnah says in Brachot, Kol ha'oseh tfilato keva, ein tfilato tachanunim. If you do your tefillot as keva, then your tefillot are lacking in the fact that they don't have any individual or personal elements to them. And tefillot tachanim, there's no outpouring, there's no beseeching of God. In other words, when it comes to the Mishnah, would say that when it comes to tefillah, the point is that you don't stick to a specific text. On the contrary, you should be as expansive as possible. In those days, in the times of the Mishnah, there were no Sidurim. They had a basic structure of what you should say and what themes you should deal with in various brachot of Kriyat Shema or of Shemoneh Esrei or so on. But nevertheless, people made it up as they went along, and prayer was a much more personal thing. Part of the challenge of prayer today, aside from the fact that we don't train ourselves properly to pray, and we don't really develop prayer as a spiritual, not just discipline, as a spiritual experience, is the fact that we use a sitter. So the possibility of mumbling like everybody does is an obstacle to true prayer. There's no question that the author of the Mishnah would have said that our prayers, if we just go and say mumble through the words, ain't filatenu tachanunim, because we make them keva. So what's bad for tefillah is actually good, says Shammai, for Torah, because this way you don't deviate too far from what the Torah originally intended. You don't take liberties with your traditions. You're being much more responsible. I think it's interesting. I didn't see any in the historical commentaries on the mission on a vote. I didn't see anybody say this, but I'm sure that this is what's going on. I think many of the commentaries say that Shammai is basically trying to give us a counterpoint to Hillel. So why would Asei Torat HaKeva be a counterpoint to Hillel? Because of something that's not written in the Mishnah. One of the things that for which Hillel is noted is the fact that Hillel apparently was the person who first extensively used things that are called Hamidot Torah Nidreshet by him, rules of interpretation that really do open up the possibilities of much broader conclusions of expanding the meaning of the Torah and applying it to unprecedented circumstances. It was very empowering from that point of view, but also could be very unsettling. I'll give you a couple of examples. So Hillel thought that there were seven rules by which the Torah is interpreted. One is Kal Vachomer. What's Kal Vachomer? Kal Vachomer is a situation, in which you say, situation A is allowed or permitted, okay? All the more in one situation, all the more so in another situation, which is different, but which is maybe more serious, it would be permitted. So, for example, if something is prohibited on Chag, on Yom Tov, all the more so will it be forbidden on Shabbos? Kal, Yom Tov is left sitting on Shabbos. And therefore, if it's prohibited here, it should be all the more so should be prohibited here, even if it's not mentioned explicitly with regard to Shabbat. That's Kal Vachomer. In other words, it's a verse that's not written, or a verse that is sort of like assumed to exist within the verse that you have. Gzeira Shava is one of the most significant ones. Gzeira Shava means that if you have the Torah in two different places, uses the same word, so you make a connection between the two. And you say, oh, there's an implicit, unstated connection between these, and therefore both of the passages instruct us, teach us something about the other. Now that's a very destabilizing type of thing, because you could end up taking it to almost to ridiculous terms. So therefore, the rabbis subsequently said, Ein adam dan gezeirah shavah miatzmo. You can't make them up. And there's only a tradition that there is such a connection. And B, you're not allowed make all kinds of conclusions. I'll give you an example. There is a gzeirah shavah. There is an assumption that there is a similarity. And there is an identity between two passages based on the use of the date of the number 15. That Pesach starts on the 15th of Nisan. Oh, actually, Chag HaMatzot. Pesach, by the way, you know, technically, as those of you learning Daf Yomi know this, Pesach what's the matter with me? Pesach is the offering of the Pesach, which is the 14th of Nisan, and what we call Erev Pesach. And Chag HaMatzot starts on the 15th. But anyways, the holiday starts on the 15th. And Sukkot starts on the 15th. So there is a tradition that there's a Gzeirah Shavah, that by virtue of the fact that they both start on the 15th, that there must be some kind of connection. So what do we deduce from that? So one thing we deduce, the major thing we deduce from that is the fact that just as there's an obligation to eat in the Sukkah on the 15th of Tishrei at night, and you can't get out of it. It's a proactive mitzvah. In other words, in other situations, if you don't want to eat bread, you don't have to go into the sukkah. But but the first night you must eat in the sukkah, you must have at least a kezayit of lechem, even if it's raining. That's all to do. Anyways, and similarly says says the Gemara. Similarly, there's a mitzvah to eat matzah the first night of Pesach. In fact, it starts with matzah and goes to Sukkah. Okay, tetvav. Now, you could, if you wanted to be consistent over here, then the obvious thing would be to say, wait a minute, if that's the case, then you have to have your Seder in a Sukkah, because you conflate the two. So the answer is no. I mean, there's a limit to how far you're going to take this. How far do you take this issue? This issue based on tradition. But the point is that this is a pasuk that doesn't exist. It's an assumed pasuk based on similarity of use of words. And that was one of the things that was introduced by Hillel. Comes Shammai and says, let's calm down. Asei Torat HaKeva. You only use tools that have come down by tradition. You're not allowed to be overly expansive. Now, I think it's a question of degree between the two of them, but Hillel apparently was a much more free-flowing commentator, and Shammai was much more conservative, and so Asei Torat HaKeva could certainly be seen as a counterpoint to Hillel's being much more innovative within the terms of the seven rules of interpretation that he insisted on using, and which he had by tradition, or he had it because it sort of grew out of there are those who pointed out that these seven rules actually are implicit in the Torah. In fact, some of them actually are explicitly in the Torah, like Kal Vachomer and some others. So in any case, that may also be what's going on over here. Asei Torat HaKeva, be conservative, be careful, be responsible. I'd rather err on the side of caution than err on the side of lack of caution. Okay. So we talked about Keva as strict constructionism. We talked about Keva as chidush and having being more cautious. So that's number one. Since I work on vicious missions today, so I'll tell you the story. I think that. That difference helps to explain one of the stories about Hillel and Shammai that they invoke to say how could Shammai say greet everybody with a big smile when he was sort of a tough guy. Sure, he was such a tough guy. The Talmud in Masechet Shabbat tells three stories about three guys, three non-Jews. All of whom decided they had heard about Hillel and Shammai, and they wanted to decide they were going to test them. The first one went to Shammai and said, "I want to convert, but you have to teach me the whole Torah while I'm standing on one foot." So Shammai heard this and said, "Get out! You're an idiot. You're making fun of me. I have no time for you." So he went to Hillel. And Hillel said to him, using a variation of the golden rule, which is a universal term, you find it all in every civilization, but the way that Hillel formulated it is interesting. Hillel says, okay, da'alach saneh l'chavrach al tavid, that which is hateful to you, don't do to others. This is the entire Torah, the rest is commentary, go and study. Okay, that was, and the guy was so impressed that he converted. Next, another non-Jew comes to Shammai and says to Shammai, Teach me the alphabet. So Shammai says, okay, alphabet gimel dalet hey vav zayin chay. He says, I want to convert. So he starts teaching him the alphabet. Alphabet gimel dalet hey vav zayin chay tet lam. So on. Okay. I'm sorry. I got the stories mixed up. My mistake. He said to Shammai, I want to learn the Bible. But I don't want to learn the oral law. You guys, you rabbis, what's the oral law? I want to learn the Bible. That's it. That's the only Judaism I want to know. And Shammai said, well, there's no Judaism without the oral law, without the Talmud. Goodbye, threw him out on his tail. He goes to Hillel, and he says the same thing. please, you know, teach me just the written law and the oral law, without the oral law. So Hillel says, fine. So he says, so he starts teaching him the Aleph-Bet. Aleph-Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zayin, Chet, Tet, Yud, whatever, until the end. And then it's the guy repeats it, and then Hillel says, fine. Now I'm going to show it, go over to with you again. Taf, oh, good, I have to do this backwards. Taf, Shin, Reish, Kuf, Tzadi, Pei. This is backwards all the way down to Aleph. And the guy looks at him and says, whoa, wait a minute. You just said you start from Aleph to Taf. Why are we going from Taf to Aleph? He says, that's why you need an oral law. The oral tradition tells you this is the order of the letters. Otherwise, they would be total anarchy. And the guy was very impressed, and he converted. Finally, there was a third guy had heard about the splendor of the high priest. He wears all these fancy clothing, and he gets to be in charge of stuff, and he's powerful. In the time of Baichin, you don't forget the high priest was also the de facto ruler of the Jews. And even after the Romans took over, he was the effective head of the Jewish community. So he goes to Shammai, and he says to Shammai, I want you to convert me because I want to be the Kohen Gadol. So Shammai says, I have no time for idiots. They threw him out. He goes to Hillel, and Hillel says, okay. He starts teaching him, and finally they get to the verse in the Torah that says that a person who's not a priest, Hazara Karev Yumat, that anybody who's not a priest who comes into the sanctuary, into the precincts of the temple, it deserves to die. And that's talking about a Jew, okay, a person who's already Jewish. So the guy says, wow, you know, if that's going to happen to me, already Jewish, what's going to happen to me? So obviously I can't be high priest, but since I'm really impressed with the way Hillel taught me, so therefore he converted. So all three converted. The story ends that all three of them met one day and they said, see, the strictness, the put offishness of Shammai almost prevented us from reaching the next world, but the humility and the patience of Hillel brought us under the wings of the Holy Presence. Okay. So the question is, okay, so here's Shammai. So how does that go with Shammai, the guy with greet everybody nicely? What's got to do? The answer is no, there's no contradiction. Shammai was willing to listen to him. The problem is he had no patience for anybody. Once they made their requests and made their statements, they had no more patience for anything. And he said, get out. In other words, he wasn't willing to wait. The minute that he saw that these people were putting forward requests that were way beyond anything that he was willing to concentrate, anything that he was willing to contemplate, he had no room for that. You see, he was with blinders on. He couldn't see beyond that, and therefore he threw them out. So there really is no contradiction. Hillel was much more expansive, and therefore he was willing to take a chance, and that may very well be typical of the two and both of them are important, because it's not good to be too expansive, because that leads to anarchy, and it's not good to be too restrictive, because that leads to atrophy, or leads to the fossilization of Torah, which is not a good thing either. We have a few minutes. Maybe we'll be able to finish the Mishnah. So that's as far as Asei Torah HaKeva. Again, regular Torah, all of them are true, by the way. Regular Torah study, care and caution in terms of the way you interpret. By the way, it also means even if you're much more expansive, you should always be responsible and not say things that are totally bananas, right? And be consistent. And more ma'at va'asei harbeh, that is good news no matter what. It's good advice no matter what. I say amor ma'at vasei harbeh. Don't make big decorations. Don't make big pleasures. Always be humble in that regard. Here the humility of Shammai and that of Hillel come together. Amor ma'at vasei harbeh. All of the commentaries say that when it comes to what you say you have, what you know, you should always be understated. And even when it comes to interpersonal relations, so consistently all the commentaries point out that when the three angels came to visit Abraham was known for his hospitality, right? when the three angels came to visit Abraham. Avraham Avinu says to them, stay, have a meal, have a little bit of bread, you have a cup of coffee, you know, whatever it is, and sit. And then he goes off to Sarai and says, get a bullock and bread and cheese and butter and makes a whole party. And more mad vasei harbe. There's a Jewish tradition like that. For example, my mother, may she rest in peace, never, ever, ever, I don't think in her life, ever gave somebody a cup of coffee without a piece of cake. When you say, I want a cup of coffee, I'm going to come over for a cup of coffee, that means you're going to serve. I mean, that it's understood because that would be cheap otherwise. You're supposed to give more. You're supposed to have a light lunch, which means five courses. And the same thing is true when it comes to I'll make a donation. Make a donation means I'll do more than is obvious. You try not to get. You don't go do it for the credit. You do it for the deed. And make sure better that than a person who makes all kinds of bombastic statements and pledges and stuff like that and ends up doing nothing, or then doing much less than what might be expected. Again, we talked about the problematics in terms of Shammai, but it's a fact that your first encounter with a person is very important, and the way you greet them can either make them or break them. If you look at a person and you give them, why are you here? You like at the earliest start, feel like you want to crawl under the rug. Because every person is created in the image of God. It doesn't matter. We're not talking to Jewish people, all people. Every single person is created in the image of God. And we have an obligation under all circumstances, even if you're busy, say, excuse me a minute, and then give full attention. There is nothing, it's the opposite of looking at your phone while you're talking to somebody, for example. Beseber panim yafot means you give them your entire face. You give them your entire attention. That's the minimum dignity, the minimum respect that every single person, and it doesn't matter how important you are. In fact, one of the things that keeps popping up in all of the, unfortunately, you know, we've lost a lot of great rabbinic leaders this past year. It's been an honest horribilis, but one of the things you constantly hear about great rabbinic figures, people who actually, you know, their time was really, really important. It could be, and it was used for all kinds of important, major things. They always were available. Somebody asked them a question, they would stop what they're doing. And Mikabel Kola Dabasevinyafot. Just to say, yes, I'm going to help you with patience and respect. It didn't matter. Because the first mitzvah is to respect the fact, first chapter in Genesis, that everyone was created in the image of God. When you honor another person, you also honor the creator of that person. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that is it for today. We will continue next week. There's going to be a major shift in the people that are speaking in the first chapter of Pirkei Avot, but before I close, please, 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 please get the vaccine. If you haven't, do it. It's not necessarily just for yourselves. We owe it to all of our communities because everybody's in this together. Please take care of yourselves. Follow the rules. There is absolutely no justification for not following the rules. Maybe next week, by next week, the numbers both in Israel and abroad will be better. And either way, have a great week. And as usual, if you want to get in touch with me, you can get in touch on private direct message. You can do it through Twitter. You can get through Instagram. You can make comments and contact me that way as well in the below. And you're invited to share the shir and share it with other friends and so on. Okay? Thank you very much. Bye.